Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, no matter how contrary that might seem, just like the nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and it's great to have you with me today. How's this month been for you? There's a super blue moon at the end of the month, although we might not be able to see it here in the UK unless the weather clears up. It won't actually be blue, although occasionally apparently we do see blue moons if the atmospheric conditions are right. But this one will be the last one for a decade, so even if it's not blue, might be worth looking out for it. But it bookends a really fairly turbulent month for some of us, where we've been letting go of old patterns and moving into a period of renewal. And I've been seeing a fair bit of new research coming out, and some of that is what we're going to be talking about on the show today. First up is a new finding from the University of Aberdeen here in Scotland, where they've announced a major breakthrough in understanding vitamin balance in the body, which they say could have implications for the diagnosis and treatment of vitamin-related diseases, from anemia to infertility to blindness. They found evidence that the hypothalamus, which is a part of the brain that regulates a lot of body systems like temperature, appetite and thirst, also regulates vitamin A or retinol, which is important for vision, the immune system, reproduction, growth and development of the fetus, as well as the function of a lot of organs, including the heart and the lungs and the brain. It's estimated that a staggering 250 million people worldwide are marginally deficient of vitamin A, and some probably more than that. We can't make it ourselves. We get it from leafy green veg, some orange and yellow veggies as well, and also beef liver and milk or eggs. Now it looks like any imbalance might not just be down to not eating enough of the right food. It could be the hypothalamus that's at fault. So that's quite an interesting breakthrough for the scientists and researchers at the University of Aberdeen. Now, talking of the brain, I'm delighted to welcome back a good friend of the show, Professor James Goodwin. Now, regular listeners might know that Professor Goodwin is Director of Science and Research Impact at the Brain Health Network. He's one of the world's foremost experts on brain health and the author of a book called Supercharge Your Brain. He also knows a lot about the effects of ageing, as he was Chief Scientific Officer at Age UK. And at one time, he advised the Centre for Better Ageing in London on research. And today, he's bringing us some fascinating facts about a real powerhouse in our bodies, and that's our mitochondria. There seems to be a lot of research into our mighty mitochondria these days, and I have been looking into it, I must confess, which is where we started our conversation. Now, mitochondria. I have seen that mitochondria are considered to be our powerhouse. It's where we get all our energy from. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And it's a health issue which you don't see talked about.
Yeah.
And therefore, the average person is not aware of how important these little tiny structures inside our cells are. They produce 90% of the energy in the body, and they're 10% of our body's weight. So the average person, if you extracted out all their mitochondria, you'd have 20 pounds of it in a bag, or 7 to 8 kilograms.
Good grief.
And that's enormous numbers, because they are only 1/1000th of a millimeter. So if you get your housekeeping tape measure out and you look at a millimeter and you divide that in your mind into 1,000 parts, that's how big one of these things are. And yet there are 20 pounds in weight of them in our body. And they're absolutely magnificent structures. By the way, JJ, there'd be no advanced life on this planet if it wasn't for mitochondria.
Wow.
Because
okay.
energy production in early life took place in dispersed chemical reactions randomly throughout the cell.
Yeah.
The fact that mitochondria arose, and we believe they arose from a microorganism getting into the early cells of life on the planet, if it wasn't for those mitochondria, which dedicate themselves to energy production, there'd be no higher life, and we certainly wouldn't be around. And they are responsible for all the processes that go on our body. So most of us can name all the systems in our body, the nervous system, the cardiovascular system, the digestive system, the endocrine system, the immune system. We can go on, reproductive system. We can go on forever about that. All of them only work properly because of these wonderful little creatures, if you like, called mitochondria.
Are they creatures or is it just cells?
Well, they arose from, we believe, from little creatures originally, which invaded the cells of smaller life forms early in the history of the planet Earth.
Oh, wow, that's mind-blowing.
They're no longer little creatures. They've been completely absorbed over millions of years of evolution into the structure, fine microstructure of the cell.
Because I've been reading up on this, and they have their own chromosomes, don't they?
Yes, they
right?
do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
And that struck me as rather bizarre, because you don't expect something within a cell to have its own chromosomes.
Well they have what's called, inside a mitochondria, is maternal DNA.
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
Yeah.
And that maternal DNA codes for the chemical reactions which goes on inside the cell.
Yeah.
Those chemical reactions are hugely important. I can go into some chemistry which might help. Well, it will help because I'm going to make some suggestions.
Yeah,
about,
absolutely. Let's have some of the chemistry.
Okay. There's one main molecule in the cells which powers all the chemical reactions which make us alive and make us the biologically the beings we are. That substance is called ATP. Now, if you look at your forefinger and you bend it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times like that, all the ATP, which is the fuel, the petrol, the gasoline, whatever you want to call it, has been used up in those 8 contractions, all of it. So the amazing thing is that this fuel in the body's cells is made on demand. Now, the demand can be horrendous if you're sick or if you're ill or if you are working physically hard or even mentally hard. The demands for that energy supply is enormous, and it's produced on demand. And it's produced in the following way. All the food that we eat consists of highly complex carbon molecules. So we're talking about fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. Let's keep it at that. Now, chemists say these are all highly reduced. In other words, they contain high amounts of hydrogen and large amounts of high energy electrons, which are little tiny particles attached to the molecules. Now, the secret of getting the energy out of the food is another chemical called NAD+, and I'll be referring to that later. Now, what does NAD+ do? Strips out these high-energy electrons from the energy-rich compounds that we've eaten and absorbed into our cells. Now, it's the devil's own job. The energy in these molecules has been packed in tight.
Yeah.
You know, you think about at the bodies of animals and plants that we eat, all the food materials, that those substances have been manufactured pretty densely. So actually stripping the energy out of them is no mean feat. But the NAD does, and it does it in tiny steps. So NAD grabs the electron, and then it flings itself across the cell to something called the Krebs cycle. This is a series of reactions within the mitochondria which deliver the energy out of the NAD. So the NAD captures it from the food, delivers it into this Krebs cycle, and then that cycle then grabs the energy again. Now, why is it called the Krebs cycle? Really interesting story. It was discovered in 1937 in the University of Sheffield by Hans Krebs.
Oh, wow.
Who had no business being there. He had no business being there because he escaped the clutches of the Nazi Jewish persecution.
I was going to say, yeah.
So in 1933, if there's a silver lining to the cloud of Nazism, it's that they kicked out a whole load of great people.
Mm.
And they escaped, and Hans Krebs was one of them. And he went, first of all, to Cambridge University. And from Cambridge University, went to Sheffield, set up a laboratory, and then discovered how the cells produce energy. And it's in this long stepwise cycle of reactions. So you've got the glucose, the energy is stripped out by NAD, these high energy electrons, it's passed over to the Krebs cycle. Krebs cycle delivers them out in tiny steps, each one being more highly energized than the other, until ATP is made. And ATP is the silver bullet, if you like, because ATP is then the fuel of the cell. Now, do you know what the catastrophe is amongst all this?
Oh, no, tell me.
The catastrophe is that between the ages of 40 and 60, the amount of NAD in ourselves is reduced by 50%. It halves.
It halves?
Yeah, it halves.
Wow.
There's all kinds of reasons for that. It's the energetics of aging, if you like. Everything slows down. So we maybe eat less, or we absorb less from the less food that we eat. Mm-hmm. And that is used less well in the cells. And the chemistry isn't whirring away at the speed it should do.
Mm-hmm.
So between the ages of 40 and 60, half our energy supply, if you like, disappears from the cells. Now, that's not just the energy of how you feel. That's the energy that's driving your heart, your blood vessels, the digestive system, the great organs of the body. All of that energy is reduced by half. And then once you get beyond 60, continues to fall by 1 to 2% a year, which doesn't sound a lot, but it's like compound interest at the bank.
Yeah.
It reduces it more and more and more and more quickly.
Yeah. Gosh.
So it reduces it by 2%. There's 2% less, and then that gets reduced by 2%. So NAD throughout our lives is onto a loser once you get to about 40.
That, may I just say, that sounds a little bit depressing, but I'm sure there are things that we can do to mitigate against it.
Yeah, there is indeed. Now, one of them is, it's been proven in scientific trials that if you take a particular food supplement, it will restore your levels of NAD+. Now, that sounds like a silver bullet, but actually what it's doing is the supplement replaces what the chemistry of the cells doesn't produce in the first place. So the substance in the supplement is called nicotinamide riboside. It's part of the family of vitamin B3. I mean, the B vitamins it's never a single substance. They're families of substances.
Yeah.
Well, some are, but vitamin B in particular is a complex. Mm-hmm. Vitamin B3, there's a family of things in there. And naturally, one of them in the food is nicotinamide riboside. But the cells aren't up to using it in such a way that it will maintain those active levels in the mitochondria. So that supplement, actually clinical trials have shown they work. I spoke to the CEO of a company called Ginfinity in the United States, which produces a supplement. And I said, what happens when you take it? Is this a Zoom call? He looked at me and he said, James, he said, I feel better within 10 minutes.
I said, 10 minutes? Wow.
I know. I said to him, Jean, you're kidding me. He said, no. He said, I and many other people feel better within 10 minutes. And he said, all the aches and pains I've got in my body, a lot of them that are immune driven, things like arthritis, he's got on his shoulder and an elbow. He said, taking the supplement has gone a long way towards reducing it. So that is one of the things we can do. Now, I had mine measured. I had my NAD. You can't measure the number of mitochondria. I mean, mitochondria there's anything between 1,000 in a cell to 10,000, depending on your lifestyle, what you do, and what the cells do. So it can vary, and you can't I suppose you could measure them, but the clinically easiest way to measure them is take a blood sample, then do a test to see how much NAD is there.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a good guide to how well your mitochondria are doing. Well, I had a test and I was gutted. I was really gutted. It was almost low off the scale, 19 micromoles of NAD in the blood sample I gave.
And what should it be if you
anything up to 1,000.
So up to 1,000?
Yeah, on that scale. I know. I was like, and I said to him, right, send me some of your supplement.
Send me some of your stuff, yeah.
Send me some of your stuff, and I'll be taking it. But you can improve the mitochondria. There's lots of things you can do. You'd be pleased to know.
I am pleased to know that, and we'll hear what those things are right after we've heard these messages from our station sponsors. Back right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the practical alchemist, and my excellent guest today, Professor James Goodwin. Now, before the break, Professor Goodwin was blowing my mind with his information on mitochondria and the fact that when he was tested, his results were incredibly low.
I'm still reeling from the fact that you had such a low reading. Yeah, from what we've been saying about mitochondria, it seems like you should have been sort of prone and actually in a box by now. Before.
Yeah, I said to Jean, look, I said, I exercise regularly. I don't overeat. I don't eat between meals and I fast intermittently.
Mm-hmm.
And I exercise regularly and I have good sleep. You know, I said, I'm staggered about that.
Yeah.
He said, it happens, James. He said, and you don't know that particular one factor is wayward until you have it measured. Now, I have to say it was expensive to get it measured.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because it's a complicated lab process and it involves lots of
as well as the
testing. So for your readers, just so they're forewarned, I paid about £180.
Not not everybody's going to fork out £180, which is way over $200 to get that done. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was way over 200. I think it was like $280, something like that. It was about £180. And so I paid for that because I was immensely curious and I'd read the studies that this supplement can boost it. So I thought, well, you know, I don't know if it's going to be doing any good unless I get a benchmark. So I got a benchmark. Now, but there are other cost-free ways of boosting your mitochondria.
Oh, now we're getting onto it. Okay, great. Tell us the cost-free ways of doing it.
Well, regular exercise is one. People hate hearing that. But if you do 150 minutes...
You actually have to do something to actually...
you have to do something, yeah. So it's brisk walking, it'd be jogging, it'd be playing golf, it can be dancing, it can be playing bowls.
Swimming,
tennis, all this stuff. If you do that regularly, so you're doing that 3 or 4 times a week and you are physically active outside the specific exercise you're doing, then that will help to boost what we call biogenesis of the mitochondria.
And that just means that you're making more of it.
Yes, you're making more of them. Now they've got their own DNA so they can replicate the mitochondria.
And yeah.
So I'm trying to recall the figures. I think if you start to exercise and you're exercising regularly and you stick at it, in 3 months you can double the amount of mitochondria in your cells. That's why your performance improves. So if you're jogging and it's really slow, you know, and it's taking you 20 minutes on a treadmill or jogging or even brisk walking to do a mile, and then suddenly it takes you far less than that, you know, you reduce that by 3/4 or a half, then that's why, because the exercise is forcing the mitochondria to reproduce themselves and meet the demand of the physical work that you're doing. Now, another good one is heat therapy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We know that heating up the body increases the efficiency of the mitochondria. So those chemical processes, you know, the NAD grabbing the energy, flinging it across the cell to the Krebs cycle and the Krebs cycle producing ATP, that'll occur faster if the body's warm than if the body's cold.
So that comes back to what you were saying about us faring better in warmer climates and our history of evolution, and that cold's a bigger killer than heat. Is that, that's what you were saying before once,
well,
wasn't
it? Well, it's a basic law of chemistry. There's a law called Q10 equals 2. If you raise the chemical reaction's temperature by 10 degrees Celsius, it doubles its efficiency.
Ooh,
so the rate
okay.
of reaction. Okay.
Yeah, so I should be listening more closely.
Now, you've got to be careful. Don't overheat the body.
No.
I conducted experiments raising the body temperature of people to see how their brain worked,
mm-hmm.
better or worse. And I could only raise it lawfully and ethically by 1.5 degrees Celsius.
Right.
Not by 10.
Right.
Only by 1.5. So I was measuring their brain temperature at two sites and raised it by 38.5. And on one, I went slightly over that. And, oh, my gosh, I was really worried that I'd caused a problem.
Mm.
It didn't. It didn't affect the individual from all the tests we did. But if you heat the body in a sauna two or three times a week, 20 minutes in a hot sauna, there's evidence that will make the mitochondria more efficient.
Oh, so having a sauna really, apart from being cleansing and, you know, you're sweating all the impurities out of your skin, it actually does something hugely beneficial in terms of the chemical reaction within your body.
Yeah, it doesn't. It also causes you to sweat. Sweating is a good way of getting the plasma out of the blood. So you've got to you've got to rehydrate. See, the sweat glands aren't selective. They don't select what leaves the blood like the kidneys do.
Right.
It's unmitigated loss. So everything, all the fluid that comes out in the sweat glands gets onto the surface of the body and then gets showered off or evaporates.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's good for opening up the pores, the sweat glands of the body. It's good for the peripheral circulation. It opens up tissues which can be have a pathology like your swollen joints of arthritis and so on. Saunas are good for your health, the fact they have a mitochondria is one reason.
Brilliant.
Relaxation and meditation theoretically is good for your mitochondria. This is why it brings stress down.
Mm.
If it brings stress down, what we call the catecholamines, adrenaline and noradrenaline, subside, and cortisol subsides.
Yes.
Now, these catecholamines, they have a dreadful effect on the mitochondria. So the more relaxed you are and the less stressed out you are, the better the mitochondria work. So that's theoretically, I'm not sure of whether people have looked at that. I don't know how they would do the experiment. It sounds fairly complicated to me, but theoretically, relaxation is good, as is good sleep. Because if you don't sleep well, oh, I tell you, people who don't sleep well have got sleep problems. Their cortisol, if you measured it on a month-by-month basis, is persistently high. So anything you can do to cure your sleep problems, you get the cortisol down. And every system in the body, which depends on, all of them depend on mitochondria, will be better.
Mm.
Now, you can eat to feed your mitochondria as well. Okay, this is a good one.
Let's hear what we should be eating, right?
Well, one of the food molecules which we know looks after the mitochondria is something called resveratrol.
Oh, yeah, resveratrol, yeah.
And that's found in red wine, grapes, and blueberries. So that's a fun time, isn't it?
Very much.
But don't overdo it, because it's like a U-shaped curve for wine or alcohol. You have a certain amount and it's good for you and the benefits rise, and then you go beyond that and it falls dramatically. So
But if you just take a resveratrol supplement, would that work? You can take it as a supplement.
You can take it as a supplement. And I don't know of any unequivocal, incontrovertible evidence that resveratrol is going to change the mitochondria so that your brain health will not go to Alzheimer's disease if it's on its way.
Okay.
You've got to be really careful with this. Resveratrol, the health benefits to it.
Mm.
Right. But the preventative or risk reduction value depends on 1,000 things.
Okay. All right.
Omega-3 fatty acids, cold water fatty fish.
Yeah.
Your mitochondria is a membrane. What are membranes made of? Lipids. What are omega-3 fatty acids? Lipids.
Yeah.
Just don't eat omega-6. How do you do that? Stay away from ultra-processed food.
Oh, yeah.
And don't overdo plant oils, because plant oils and certain seeds and nuts are wickedly and damagingly rich in omega-6 fatty acids. So,
oh, gosh, I know.
Three is the one to go for.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go for something called ALA. That's an omega-3 in particular, alpha-linoleic acid. That's found in grass-fed beef, liver, which people don't seem to eat anymore.
I do. I eat it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, and I know people who do, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, liver. Spinach, broccoli.
Nice.
They've got loads and seeds. They've got certain seeds. They've got loads of ALA. Now, another one is L-carnitine and creatinine. Where are they found? Lean red meat, poultry and eggs. They are the ones for that. And some of those, but much less, in nuts, beans and seeds. And you've got to pick them out. You've got to do some homework. And pick them out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, intermittent fasting is another one.
We should be all right then. I mean, listen to all of this. And you were still so low. What?
I'm meeting Jin Yong in the United States in October.
Okay.
And I'll talk over the chemistry with him.
Okay, great. I look forward to hearing what happens, what comes out of that, because
I can come back and give you a postscript.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be good, because from what you're saying right now, you would seem to be, although apart from your age, of course, and you know, you did give us a pretty grim picture of anybody over 60.
Yeah.
Apart from that, you're kind of doing most of the things that you would expect would have really kept your levels up.
Now, what I say to people about that is, first of all, there are huge individual differences. So when you hear public health messages and say, do this, you'll be okay, and then it turns out you're not, people say, well, what was all that about? Well, nobody knows when they're giving you advice on where you are on the curve of distribution of aging. Are you aging quickly? Are you aging slowly?
Mm.
Where are you on that curve of response?
Mm.
It's hard to say. So individual differences are enormous. Aging in itself is a hugely powerful influence on our bodies. So you can put your foot on the brakes and you can ease it and you can slow it down. Mm. But everyone dies in the end, you know, and it's not going to make you live forever. Some people believe that we can change the chemistry of the body so that we can live indefinitely.
Mm.
I'm open-minded about that, but at the same time skeptical because of the laws of thermodynamics and what's something that's called entropy, where all chemical reactions run down and their final energy state is warmth, is just the heat of the body. That's it. But you can slow aging down, and you've got to be very, very judicious about how much you expect, what your expectations. You've got to modify your expectations about it. So what we can do is, by our lifestyle, we can reasonably slow down aging. In some individuals, that will be very quick. And we all know people who look 80 and look 50. Sorry, R80 and look 50.
Mm, yeah.
We all know people like that. I don't look my age. I know people who are in their 70s and they look in their 40s. So there's these huge individual differences, and you can slow it right down. And what does any of us want out of life? A long, healthy, good quality life.
Yeah.
Not a long life in ill health.
No.
Not a poor quality long life. Now, doing all the right things in our lifestyle, like looking after our mitochondria, is going to make a difference. It's just that the difference varies hugely from one person to another.
It does, yeah. Yes, you're absolutely right there, of course. And you can never offer guarantees with any supplement or anything, because you don't know what's going on underneath the skin of the other person in front of you. You just don't know.
No, you don't. But what I would say, though, is that mitochondria have been implicated not just in a decline in health, but also decline in performance of the brain. So if you look at people, if animal experiments, so they've stressed out mice, they've made them a little bit too cold or a little bit too warm, or they haven't fed them all the calories quite that they need, or they've dehydrated them a little bit. I mean, all these experiments are governed by immensely tight ethical scientific rules. So we're nowhere where we were 50 years ago with animal experiments. But when they've looked at mice who are slightly stressed, the mitochondria do weird things. One is they become circular. Oh. So they're normally like a little capsule, like a little caplet or capsule. They're like a cod liver oil capsule. They're shaped like that. Little tiny. They form a circle because of the stress that they're under. They're called donut mitochondria. And when the mitochondria in the nerve cells suffer from stress and start to form donuts, the nerve cells talk between each other far less well. So our processing slows down.
Right.
What we can do with our brain slows down and our memory starts to go on. Mm. So that's one of many reasons why this change happened. Mm. So for me, it's worth looking after my mitochondria. So I know all those things, but I took the test and I'm going to swallow the tablet.
Absolutely.
If I'd have taken the test and I'd been at the other end, I wouldn't have bothered.
Right. Right.
I think I'm going to take the supplement now.
Yeah. And so is that it in terms of how we mitigate against losing all these mitochondria?
No, I think all the factors I mentioned, the earlier you start, the better it is.
Right.
Will do a great job at looking after mitochondria. You don't want to sit back and say, oh, look, these losses are natural, I'm just going to accept it. Well, I'm not. I don't think JJ, you would sit there and accept it.
No.
You know, I know you're a great cold swimmer, natural swimmer. You know, you're not going to give, that's got benefits. I'm not going to give up that just because, if you slacken off your discipline in terms of your lifestyle, the price you pay is accelerated aging, more pain and more illness. And I know some people say, well, I did all these things and it didn't make any difference. You may have had it earlier or it may have been worse. But the evidence is for the general population that these things in our lifestyle will make a difference.
Mm.
I'm not going to sit back and say, let nature take its course. You've got to fight aging. I'm in my 70s and I still run 1 to 3 miles 3 times a week. That's good.
Well, that's very good, though. That is very good.
I've taken up boxing. I don't compete because I don't want blows to my head. No. That boxing training, anyone who's listening who's married to a boxer or is a boxer or knows a boxer will know that boxing training is the hardest training there is.
Yeah. Yeah, it is very tough. You're right. Yes. And a lot of people take up boxing just for the exercise because it is really good for your body and really sort of builds up muscle and everything fast. Yeah. So I hear what you're saying about us taking these supplements and maybe we think they're not doing anything for us, but they are. I was talking to somebody the other day about another supplement, which I've discovered. And it's been great for me. The change has been extraordinary.
Sure.
Now,
I'm not an exponent of a blanket taking of hundreds of supplements.
No, me neither. Me neither.
You have to be very careful and selective about what you do.
Correct. I actually agree with you too. There are some that are really good and some that really worked for me. A friend of mine who's much younger than me is taking this particular supplement. Probably talk about this another time. I said, well, it hasn't really done a great deal for me. But then she's like 20 years younger than me, you know, she doesn't have the same body as me.
Yeah.
But yet it might still be helping her in ways that she doesn't actually, you know, feel or or understand or recognize at this moment, but it might help her further down the line.
Sure.
Well, we'll hear Professor Goodwin's response to that in a moment, but first it's time for another break. We'll be back with more right after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today is the brain health expert, Professor James Goodwin, talking to us today about our mitochondria, the fabulous little structures that give us our vitality. And as ever, taking a supplement isn't always the answer. They will have different effects on different people, but there are ways we can mitigate against falling levels of mitochondria.
If I knew the things I know now at an earlier age, I'd have had a different lifestyle. I really would. Having said that, because I was in the army for 25 years, I kept immensely fit.
Mm.
And then when I left the army, let it go for a while with drastic results. And then it was very hard to pick it up again. But you've got to do things which you enjoy, do things which aren't onerous, do things which you like, do things which you believe in, and above all, look at the evidence. I won't do anything unless I've looked at the evidence. Otherwise, it's just what Granny said. Now, Granny got it right from time to time, but she got it wrong on a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to rely on folklore or popular belief or what I read in a cheap magazine somewhere. I'm going to look at it carefully and then take some action as a result of that.
Yeah. But we can, you talk about fighting the aging process. I guess really the way I look at it is that we can live long and healthily, live long and prosper, as they say in Star Trek.
Yes.
we can do that if we embrace things which can help us and stop. I always talk about, as you get older, things fall off a bit, you know, things kind of start crumbling off, you know, crumbling away, a bit like a building. If you leave it and you're not looking after it, things will start crumbling and sort of falling off, you know, the roof will cave in and all that sort of thing. And I talk about it in terms of that, and that if we can do something to shore up our system, then why not?
I mean, none of us would leave the roof just to take its own course and then suddenly find ourselves with a flood and a major repair bill.
Exactly.
You'd actually on a steady basis, you'd look after something like that to make sure that you weren't going to have a catastrophe. Now, roofs sooner or later will blow off.
Yeah, absolutely.
All in if you leave them long enough. But
So people will do that. People will do that with their home, but they won't do that with their body.
I know. It is astonishing. One in five people exercises according to the advice. The advice is 150 minutes a week, plus some lifting of weights. Now, I'm not talking about being in a gym. I'm talking about doing any activity specifically 2 to 3 times a week in which you lift things.
Yeah, like carrying shopping.
Carrying shopping is one,
but
in the house specifically, let's say, can I lift these books 10 times?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I'll do that every week,
mm-hmm.
you know, or you can improvise whatever you like if you can't go to the gym. I do lift weights at the gym, I have to say.
Mm. Yeah.
And it does make a difference. It maintains your physique. The big struggle is keeping your waistline trim as you get older. You're fighting genetics there, and you're fighting aging as well. So aging and genetics mean that across all ethnic groups or races in the world, genetics and aging cause changes in morphology. That's the shape of the body. And differently for men to women. Right? Differently for men to women. So men tend to put weight on their bellies. Women tend to put weight on their bottoms and thighs. Now, the proof is unequivocal. You go around the world, all populations, if you look at biological men and biological women, those changes take place with age. It's a natural course of events. Now, you have to fight that. You can fight it and you can keep it down to a reasonable level. The further it sets in, the harder it is to move. But there are ways, and you can stay trim if you keep at it.
Yeah, absolutely. It gets harder, maybe, the more you've, not just the older you get, although that's a factor, but the more you've neglected your body, it gets harder.
Yeah, you're on a trajectory. You're on a journey, and it's the direction of travel. If you've led a dissolute life, and when you get to your 50s, 60s, and 70s, it will make a big difference. One of the ways, I talked to a consultant physician in men's health in Harley Street, Malcolm Carruthers. And people can look him up, and he's done some good podcasts as well.
Mm.
And he said, young men have serious sexual dysfunction, erectile dysfunction, and spermatogenesis, infertility problems, if they pickle their testes early in life by overdrinking.
Oh, really? So,
yeah. If you are a major consumer of alcohol, so you are regularly over the limit and regularly getting drunk between the ages of 18 or 30, when you get to 50, 60, and 70, the chances of you having those problems are huge.
Wow. Wow.
Absolutely huge. And I've talked to some of Malcolm's patients, and they've said, do you know how you got to this? And they said, yeah, you know, 8 pints a day for 20 years.
Gosh, yeah. And it doesn't do your brain any good either, which is something that you would,
He said to me, men's reproductive organs are hugely unforgiving. He said, your liver might forgive you and your kidney might forgive you, you know, your stomach as well. And you might be able to rehabilitate those, he said, but not. You know, reproductive organs. I didn't talk to him about women's health because he was a men's health specialist.
Right, yeah.
So I wouldn't like to make a statement about female physiology, but certainly for male physiology, boys, if you're listening out there, don't pickle your testes.
Well, but then
in alcohol.
But then getting back to the mitochondria, would taking a mitochondria supplement not help with that too, or would that not work, do you think?
I don't know if in theory, in principle, it sounds as though that might be a good plan, but whether it actually does or not,
yeah, so there hasn't been
any variables in it.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. And Malcolm recommends testosterone supplementation.
Okay. Yeah.
Which the NHS is dead against.
Oh, I didn't know that. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Of my experiences, the NHS is that again. If you want testosterone supplementation, which, by the way, does not turn men into raping psychopaths, it's a myth. All right, and doesn't exaggerate their male features; it just makes you normal.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And so
you'll have to go private. You'll have to go private, JJ.
That's just well, I don't want to go private to do it, but yes, I know what you mean. So then getting back to mitochondria, and just to finish off, so my mind is still a bit blown by what our mitochondria are and how they can suddenly drop, and your test results coming back absolutely extraordinary. You must come back and do a postscript.
I will let us know
about that.
Sure.
But so getting back to those, so if we are losing all those mitochondria over the years, and it's huge, 60 plus, that is going to affect our brain. It's going to affect our whole body.
Yeah.
And so what is the optimum then that one might make sure we're eating all the right things, doing all the right things, the swimming, the running, the exercise, the right foods, all of that sort of stuff. I mean, surely if we think that we're starved, if you'll excuse the pun, of proper nutrition, surely then taking a supplement early on would help.
Generally speaking, if you are eating a varied diet of essentially natural food substances, most healthy people don't need a supplement. But in specific circumstances where measurement is made, or there is a diagnosed deficiency, or there is evidence that that person needs a supplement, then you should take the supplement. The other supplement I take is vitamin D in the winter. Why? Because above 40 latitude north
or
south,
we don't get any sun.
You don't get any sun. So in the winter, there's only one way around it. Yeah. That's the price we pay for having white skin.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. You need the sunlight. You need the sunlight. And if you haven't got the sunlight, you don't make the vitamin D.
Yeah. Well, I am mind blown. I think that this whole... It's quite new, people talking a lot about mitochondria, isn't it? I don't think I've heard a lot about it up until now.
No, it's very new. In the United States, it's the latest big rave.
Yes. So I understand.
Trend.
Yeah.
Startup companies are springing up to try and do this. Unfortunately, the expertise isn't wide enough for these companies to get it right all the time.
Right.
It isn't available enough.
Mm.
I will say this, though. Mitochondria and their reduction with age is only one physiological issue which affects our health in aging. So I wouldn't like your listeners to think to themselves, I'm doomed because my mitochondria aren't there.
Good. I'm glad you said that.
You mustn't think that, right? We're just focusing on an area where there's new evidence and actually great evidence that we can do something about it. So that's the optimistic smile on your face way in which I'd like to leave.
I think that is a great point to leave this conversation. Do not lose hope, all you listeners out there. We are okay. We can do things about it. Yeah. James, thank you so much. This was really fascinating. Yeah, I mean, it's not the sort of thing that I've heard talked about very often in my life. I mean, I'd heard the word mitochondria. I kind of had an idea what mitochondria were. But yeah, it really is coming to the fore now. And thank you very much for explaining about it and giving us some of the latest information there. So thank you so much. And do come back and tell us how you get on after your very poor
results. With my NAD plus.
Yes, your NAD plus. So thank you so much.
All right. It's a pleasure, JJ. Thank you.
Always a pleasure to have Professor Goodwin on the show, and always great information. Now, apparently, August the 25th was predicted to be the most common day for us Brits to fly, possibly to some warmer destinations, methinks. It's good to know that any of these people who are boosting their body temperature will be positively affecting their mitochondria and giving their vitality a boost. Holidays really are good for you. And with that lovely thought, we're sadly at the end of the show. I hope you've enjoyed it and found a nugget or two in there that will help you. Remember, you can listen to all our shows on all the main podcast platforms these days, and if you like what you hear, or if they've helped you, do help us spread the word by sharing them. Also, if you haven't already, I'd love you to check out the show I co-host with psychiatrist and coach Dr. Mark Goulston here on UK Health Radio. It's called Hurt Less, Live More, and Mark and I share experiences, anecdotes, and wisdom with some great guests who have had the courage to feel into their feelings and heal. If you want more information on health and well-being, you can head over to my website. It's thepracticalalchemist.uk. Subscribe to my newsletter to be the first to get some great content, or find me as The Practical Alchemist on Instagram and Facebook. So thank you for listening today. Join me for more alchemy here on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast another time. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.